I am Linda van Tolberg for BizNews. With 2 weeks before South Africa's all-important 20 May elections, politicians are frantically trying to sell their message, with smaller parties insisting that they can provide an alternative to the ruling ANC. Polls, although they vary, have consistently indicated that the ANC could lose its majority for the first time in 30 years. And let's talk about that to Professor Theo Venter, a political analyst at the University of Johannesburg. Hi, Theo, and welcome again to BizNews.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
Well, the polls keep on coming out, and I see the latest is actually thinking that the ANC is improving and gaining ground.
You know, it has been a characteristic of the ANC. Well, except for the first election in 1994, all subsequent elections, they had this ability to, in the last, let's say, 3 or 4 weeks before the election, they can pull out all the stops. And every time it surprised us in terms of how well they could mobilize in the last few, let's say, last 2 to 3 weeks before an election. And this election is not different. When we started with the analysis earlier on, it was clear that we are now ending the sixth administration of the Republic of South Africa, which is what it's formally called, and we have an election, and then we will have the seventh administration. Of course, that is the seventh since 1994, but the ANC is going into the election with 57% of the vote. To lose 7 or 8% of the vote in an election is a massive situation. And that is what the polls have shown the ANC over the last 4, 5, 6 months, that they constantly polled round about 40 to 45 to 46% in that ballpark. And it was my view, and we've said it on this program, if they get more than 46% of the vote, they actually win the election handsomely. And I think the important thing that we must remember, that in proportional representation, winning 50% of the vote is actually extraordinary. Most proportional representation elections, if we look at Europe and a few other countries, then if you get 30 to 40% of the vote, you're the dominant party, and you then form a coalition. Well, coalition politics in South Africa hasn't worked very well. So that was the big question. If the ANC poll low and they get that kind of support, then it is into coalition territory, which if we look at the metros in South Africa and some of the local governments, that it is not a good history. But in analyzing the election, I stumbled across something which I have missed over the last 20 or 30 years. And that is looking closely at the outcome of the elections in KwaZulu-Natal, the provincial outcome. Because with MK, suddenly we focus on KwaZulu-Natal as a province and as a region with about 20% of the voting population. And then, except for the first election in 1994, which we all knew was a kind of designer election, I never thought the ANC or IFP got 10% of the vote and 50% of the province. I thought that was given to them. But we will probably never know, because somewhere in the 99th hour of the election, something went haywire with the statistics, and they had to kind of resuscitate the system. But let's leave that as is. It served a good purpose then. But if you then look at the ANC support in KwaZulu-Natal, whatever they got in KwaZulu-Natal reflected strongly in terms of what they got nationally. 60% of the vote, 64% of the vote, those kind of things. So looking at KwaZulu-Natal as an indicator, something that the Americans would call a bellwether state, or one of those places, if you watch it, it will give you a view of what goes on in the country. Then I think KwaZulu-Natal this year is really something that we will all have to watch, especially since we have witnessed several court cases where the IEC were challenged, where Zuma was challenged, where the ANC got challenged, and these kind of things. And despite all of these challenges, Jacob Zuma will participate in the election. And the big question, 2 weeks, 2 weeks before a national election, we are still struggling with this question. Is MK a flash in the pan, or is it a game changer? It is somehow very difficult to determine what it is. Markinor, or Ipsos is the new name, came out with surveys last week, which was done in the previous month or so, and they polled 8% of the national vote for MK. Now, that is significant. That is about, well, that's more what Cope got when they tried, and it is more than the EFF got when they first went on the national electoral route. 8% is something where you can influence politics. But then the question starts, and that is where all of us are currently, collectively, separately, individually, are thinking and reflecting on the election. At what point would the ANC get enough not to even consider MK or the EFF? And that would be a number, I would say, above 45%. Then they wouldn't mind about those two political parties. They can go it on their own. They may rope in the IFP or one or two of the 1% parties. For instance, somebody like the Patriotic Alliance is currently doing fairly well, especially in the Western Cape. Now, if they do fairly well in the Western Cape, it means that they will also get some handsome numbers in the national vote, anything from 1% to 3%, which is very useful if the dominant party is looking for a small partner to form a government. At what point would they then consider tapping into, for instance, the support of the DA to form kind of a grand coalition? Because I think few people realize that if the ANC goes into a coalition agreement after the election with either the EFF or MK, that's the end of Cyril Ramaphosa. Because let me just remind our listeners, our president is indirectly elected. Political parties are elected depending on what they get. We have a parliamentary inaugural session 10 days after the election, maybe 12 days, but let's say within 2 weeks, we have an inaugural session. At that session, the Chief Justice is chairing Parliament. First order of business is to elect a speaker. Now, even when the speaker is elected, we will know what the support and what the hang of Parliament would be, who is going to support what. Once you have a speaker, and then for that brief 1 hour, the country is actually rudderless. It has no leader because the president is not the president anymore. The speaker is acting, and then the president gets elected in seventh administration. Now, if the EFF and MK mobilize support beyond what the ANC can deal with, they will not allow the president to be nominated. Because that is both of them. That's the purpose of their political participation at the moment, despite their manifestos, despite what they say on trails. They don't want Ramaphosa to return. The ANC needs Ramaphosa to return. So they will have to look at what goes on. And this is the centerpiece of what's going to happen in the week or so after the election. So we are currently in a situation where typically in South Africa, the road towards the election is the intense one. And then on the day of the election, you will know you've done that several times. Nothing actually happens. People are just voting. You've got nothing to analyze. There's no counting. There's no outcome. It's almost playing or filling time with stories. And then on day two, when the count comes through, that's where the big discussion begins. And then by day two, probably day three, all the votes were counted, the election is over. This time around, we have this intense period before the election, and I am suggesting and thinking that we will have an intense period of a week, 10 days after the election, to see who goes to bed with whom, if the outcome is what the polls are currently telling us.
So eventually you're saying that we should watch KwaZulu-Natal, that's the bellwether, what's going on there. But at the moment, the MK party seems to be in shambles. It's got a lot of internal strife. Wouldn't that make a difference?
Yes, it would make a difference. But the one thing they've got, which keeps them glued together, which provides the cohesion, is a man called Jacob Zuma. I mean, MK entered politics without a manifesto, without a constitution, without elected leadership and all those kind of things. It is a weak point, but it is also their strength, that Jacob Zuma is the glue that keeps them together. You will remember that when COPE started, they had a similar problem. They had a leadership contestation right from the beginning. Shiloa and Tera Lakota just couldn't get eye to eye. Eventually, that leadership caused the breakout of COPE and what seemed to be a political party that is there for the long term with a sustainable kind of approach just fell apart. Today, it's a micro party with one or two representatives, and it all started with leadership. Now, that is in MK at the moment, and we saw over the last 2 weeks letters being written, accusations being made, because the leadership is not elected. It seems to me, if I listen to Jacob Zuma's daughter, the leadership in MK is kind of like in a fiefdom or in a tribe where king and the son of the king takes over. It's not as if it's democratically elected. That, of course, is very close to what Zuma is doing. Zuma is playing Zulu nationalism, and he's playing it hard, and he's playing it directly. And I think that if you look at the disbursement of Zulu-speaking people in South Africa, and you look at a map, you'll see the whole of KwaZulu-Natal is Zulu-speaking, and then it goes up and into the eastern part of the Free State, a little bit of Mpumalanga, into the southern portions of Gauteng. Those are areas where Zulu-speaking people are fairly dominant. And if you now take that little picture back to the 2021 conflicts, you will see where the conflicts were and where they were strongest. And I think that is where MK will also show their strongest support. In other words, portions of the Free State, portions of Mpumalanga, portions of Gauteng, and a large portion of KwaZulu-Natal. And I think that is the big challenge. And then they would like, after the election, to have a conference, to have elections, and these kind of things. I think they're barking up a very, very difficult tree with the way in which they put the cart before the horse.
So if the ANC is tracking up, what is the position with smaller parties? Because it's interesting how people initially, when you talk to them months before the election, would say, yes, I like this minority leader, I like that minority leader. And as it gets closer to the election, it seems that people tend to gravitate to what they know.
Yeah, I think you're quite right. Voting behavior are very, very definitely determined by language, culture, the region that you live in, whether it's urban or rural, what tradition you were steeped in, what you did previously, and changing your political position, I think is very, in South Africa at least, it's very close to a religious conversion to do something different or to vote for something else. That's why South Africans so far over the last 30 years stayed away from the polls, especially in the black voting area, rather than to vote against. the ANC with its liberation character. But I think certain things happened over the last 4 or 5 years, that things such as load shedding and cost of living challenges and lack of a growing economy, corruption, I think that changed a little bit in the behavior of people, and that they're now looking more critically towards where they're going to vote. I think the biggest determinant of the vote will be a growing urbanization in the country. In the most recent statistics by Stats SA, it shows that about 67% of South Africans are living in big towns and cities, metro areas. About 50% of the population is living in about 17 of the biggest towns and cities in the country, and the rest are living in small places. And once you have that concentration of people in urban areas, it changes the political behavior. Why? Well, if you're in a city or a big town, the sources of information change. You have TV, you've radio, you've got newspapers, you've got people, you are traveling in taxis. A taxi is a platform of discussion, same with buses and so on. Compare that to rural areas where you've got limited communication. You've got a tribal chief, probably, that tells you, or a traditional chief that tells you where to vote and what to do. And you've got very little to challenge the current wisdom where you are in whatever, whether you're in Limpopo or Northwest or Eastern Cape or KwaZulu-Natal. And the ANC traditionally had a very strong following in the rural areas. Up to 30% of their vote came from rural areas. And I would say that their biggest challenge is to get the other 20% to get to 50 in the metro areas. And you can see their charm offensive in KwaZulu-Natal over the last week, what they do in bigger townships, the fact that they call in the old stalwarts, Thabo Mbeki and the old deputy president and the whole bunch of them, Tokyo Sekhwale, sent into Soweto. That means they really need the ANC to mobilize support. And I think that is absolutely in line with what the ANC has done previously. And we must remember, these campaigns are extremely expensive. I don't think money is at the moment saved in any way, because there's a new way in which the financing has been determined in terms of legislation last week, which means I think it unlocked a lot of money for this election. I hope by hook or by crook that some of the spending that takes place for this election filters into the economy and gives us another 0.1 or 0.2% growth just by spending patterns.
But that legislation favors the ANC.
Heavily, heavily. The previous legislation had a far more equitable distribution. Just to remind the listeners that they took the money that goes to political parties and they put it in two categories. The one category was roughly about a third of the money goes proportionally to all the political parties. In other words, you get the money in terms of your size. The rest is then distributed equally between the parties in parliament. That meant the EFF and the Freedom Front Plus and those smaller parties got a lot of money in that system. Now that they've changed the legislation, the reason why they had to change the legislation, well, at least that's the justification, was to allow for independents to participate in the election. And that, of course, was a big uncertainty. But we now know only 6 people succeeded in being on the national list, which is a very, very small number. But that was actually used to redesign how they distribute money. And they changed that to 90% of the money going proportionally. That means the ANC gets 57% of 90%. That's a huge amount of money. And then the rest is distributed equally among parties. And most political parties were mad at this. But it's 2 weeks before the election. You can't go to court. There's just not enough time. And there's very little that they can do about it. I'm sure it will be discussed after the election. But like several other challenges to the election, I just think time is not on the side of those guys going to court.
So what about a decision on Jacob Zuma by the Constitutional Court? You know, is there a chance that he might not be able to go to parliament, even if his party has some seats?
Yeah, well, you know, we this is the second time that we're listening to the same arguments. The first time was when the IEC and Zuma met in the election appeal court, where five judges did what I would call a kick for touch in rugby terms. They knew this was a difficult case, and they decided in a weird way to say that if they follow the rules of the Constitution and the Electoral Act, then what Zuma got in the Constitutional Court was not a conviction because he had no appeal right. And therefore, in our Constitution, if you're convicted, if you have the ability to appeal, he had no appeal right, therefore he was not convicted. Now, to me, that was a weird kind of argument. Now, in the Constitutional Court on Friday, and the Constitutional Court sat until late in the evening to hear all the arguments. And my view is that the outcome of this will be imminent. We will have the outcome before the election. Probably not the written outcome, just the decision. And my view is that Zuma will not be allowed to go to parliament, that they would make the following ruling, that one, he had a sentence of 15 months in jail. Of that, he only served 3 months. But there's a distinction that was made very, very wisely by one of the advocates, saying that there's a difference between remission of a sentence and amnesty of a sentence. If you get amnesty, like we did in 1993, 1994, with the transition from the old dispensation to the new, then your sins are forgiven. That means that sentence does not exist. We have forgotten about it. That's what amnesty means. But if you get remission, it means you had a sentence, you got discount on the sentence, if I can call it that. You only served a small portion. And we've seen this with several other people. We saw it with Gaitan McKenzie, one of the guys that's probably going to parliament. He had the remission of sentence. We saw that with Oscar Pistorius. But remember, in both those cases that I mentioned, the original sentence is on the books. It is there, but they did not serve the whole term. Now, there's a second portion, and that is, if you've served the whole term, like Gaitan McKenzie, you got out earlier, but it is more than 5 years ago, then you can go to parliament. In the case of Zuma, there is not the lapse of 5 years. So I think he's not eligible. He can stand, his face can be on, he can be on the ballot paper, but he will not go to parliament. And then lastly, I think he can't go to parliament, because once he goes to parliament, as an old president with all the benefits and things, salaries and stuff that a president gets, what are they going to do with his salary as an MP? He will have to choose what to do. And so I think personally, Jacob Zuma wants to influence parliament. He doesn't want to sit in parliament. I mean, he was way too ill to attend these court cases several times. I think as an old man, very, very ill, I don't think going to parliament is a good thing. So, yeah, that's just tongue-in-cheek. But I think Zuma is not going to parliament on the basis of the court case and on the basis of his political strategy. He wants to prevent Ramaphosa from becoming president again. That is his main purpose. His main purpose is not to influence legislation.
So can we end off with a prediction of what you think is going to happen?
Yeah, I've got a view that the ANC will not make the 50%, but it will just be under the 50%. Let's make it 48% for a number, and that the ANC will be able to form a government with the assistance of one or two of the smaller parties, that the freedom or the charter group, the Moonshot Pact, so to speak, and with the flaming DA as part of the big group, they will get somewhere in the 30s, I guess, around about 35% of the vote. And the EFF will get their typical 10%, and the big, the new kid in the block will be MK. But I think MK will have a history very similar to Cope. That is, that it is a one election party with a very, very small chance of a sustainable approach after the election.
Well, that's an interesting prediction about the end of Zuma eventually.
Yeah, because the party is built around Zuma. You will see all the political parties that was built around individuals. And the exception is, and I was wrong, I was also of the opinion that once Mangosuthu Buthelezi dies, the IFP will die. Well, I was completely wrong. The IFP has actually shown like a phoenix. It emerged out of ashes. At one point, it only had about 10 or 12% of the vote in KwaZulu-Natal. It is back to about 20, 24% of the vote. So there's a real growth. And, of course, what they're doing, they are using Buthelezi as the face of the party. So in his demise, in his death, he is making a huge contribution in terms of what goes on there, almost like Lady Di. In her death, she had an impact on the royalty, changes in the royal house that she would never have while being alive. It's a pity that she died the way she did, but the changes came after her death, and I think what Buthelezi did after his death, he gave a new injection of political life into the IFP.
So the period after the election is going to be really interesting until that first sitting of Parliament.
Very much.
Professor Theophane Derms, thanks so much for speaking to us.
My pleasure, like always.